to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Sam from FPL Family.
And I'm Oscar, FPL Focal.
Oscar, what a pleasure this is. I don't think that we've ever podded together in all the years that we've known each other. So this is going to be fun. Game week 16, however, was not fun for the left backs in the game, was it? Andy Robertson, Reinaert Nouri, who's become, I don't know, a bit of a troublemaker in the FPL community, and Mark Kukurea all picking up red cards. For Reinaert Nouri, that's a -2. I really, really could have done without that in my game week 16 team. Did you have him too?
No, I didn't. But yeah, I was going to say the exact same thing. Yeah, our first pod together. So I'm looking forward to this. But unfortunately, I did dodge the Reinaert Nouri there. Yeah.
Oh, I'm a bit jealous that you dodged it. It's been one of those for me, Reinaert Nouri, over the last few weeks. And we'll talk about him more later. But back-to-back 0 pointers actually felt good on the back of this one, because I was like, -2, Ryan, come on, man. What are you doing? And of course, because he picks up the red card, it resets. So he's back to having 4 yellow cards right. again. So he might come back from suspension and then pick up another one, which would be a bit of a disaster. Anyway, how was game week 16 for you?
It wasn't too bad for me. Yeah, 54 points all out. So that took me from 156K to 153K. So basically no rank movement there, but just about enough to show up as a green arrow, which obviously always looks nicer. Yeah, funnily enough, I was actually on a red arrow. But after the final, you know, bonus recalculation on Monday night, Palmer snuck a bonus points, who I did captain him. So that was nice. Yeah, I don't know if it's been discussed on the pods before, but I actually think that's a great change by FPL this season. Because sometimes you do get those goals and assists that can spill over to the next day and, you know, further reviews needed. So, yeah, obviously the bonus recalculations as well now for FPL teams. So I think that's a positive change. But, yeah, I didn't have any of the red cards, fortunately, from the left backs, as you say. How did you get on?
I had 59 this week. So actually a decent week for me, and another green arrow. So that took about 200k off my rank, which is nice. Is really nice. Yeah, so I'm feeling much more positive going into the Christmas week, because you know, that's the week that I really kind of feel like you can get massive gains. Obviously, the game week coming up at the weekend, followed by another one in midweek, followed by another one again the following weekend. So it feels like you can make some really big gains. And Reinaert Nouri was a frustration, because that's, you know, another 100 places probably, a couple, you know, so that's a an annoyance, but it is what it is. I had Lewis Hall for his 15-pointer, so that was absolute heroics from him.
Very I was looking much at your team, that. Very jealous of the Hall pick. Yeah, nice pick there. Well done.
Yeah, I very much enjoyed that. And I've had him for a couple of weeks. And you know, it was interesting because on Saturday, I very nearly moved him to the bench when I heard about the Nick Pope injury, because I was like, oh, what's that going to mean for that Newcastle defence? Would I be better to play Dallow instead? And in the end, decided that no, Lewis Hall's threat from set pieces is probably worth playing in for. The double Arsenal defence coming in trumps again with Timber and Raya. So that felt nice. Bruno Fernandes doing not a lot and then converting a penalty and picking up some bonus points was a very, very welcomed. And then couldn't help but feel a little bit frustrated by Dom Solanke, just the assist in a 5-goal win for Spurs. So that was a little bit annoying. But I had captain Mo Salah. So although not the right captain in my team, of the options that I was considering going into this one, it was the right one. And probably, I think, Oscar, that's a good enough place to start, isn't it, with that captaincy dilemma? Because Mo Salah, Bukayo Saka, Cole Palmer, they all were the kind of three that we were all talking about, and which one of them was going to be the right one to captain. I very, very nearly moved the armband to Bukayo Saka on Saturday morning. I just had this feeling that Arsenal might do well in this one. It was a Pickford masterclass, wasn't it? Like, you don't normally, I guess over the course of the season, we expect at some point we're going to see a Jordan Pickford heroic display because it happens every now and then that he's just incredible. Picks up the 5 saves. He's the top scoring goalkeeper of the game week with 8 points, got his clean sheet, a couple of bonus points in there too. 66 points for him now across the season so far. That edged him past both Raya and Onana as the highest scoring goalkeeper in the game now. And I did not think I'd be saying that on the back of the game against Arsenal.
It was a bit deja vu, wasn't it? I remember last season, Pickford started horribly and I had him from game week one and then he got going and he actually was a great pick in the end. Mm. That's even more frustrating when you pick someone who does badly, you take them out and then they start doing well. It always seems to happen, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, like, as you say, 6th clean sheet of the season for Everton, which is actually the same as Arsenal. But yeah, Gabriel back at last as well. I mean, that's another example. You know, lots of people were selling him and it was one of those where you've come this far, I suppose, just keep hold of him. And he was back in. He got the three bonus points. But yeah, 0-0 draw. As an Arsenal fan, that one was really frustrating. Obviously, even more so based on the other results of the weekend.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Gabriel, you're absolutely right. He's now the highest scoring goalkeeper in the game. It was a very difficult call, I think, for FPL managers going into this one because we weren't really getting a lot of news from Arteta. We were hearing that it might be a bit of a late fitness test. And that is not ideal when you're talking about a premium defender because you need to make decisions quickly before a deadline. And particularly with the later deadline going into that 3 o'clock, I think people were leaving it as late as possible to decide what to do. I always felt that Gabriel was a hold this week because even if he didn't play against Everton, he wasn't a long-term injury. We were expecting him to be back relatively soon afterwards anyway. And, you know, you're right in what you say. Everton having kept the same number of clean sheets, we talk about the Arsenal defence as elite, and they are. They absolutely are, and that's why I've doubled up on them. But it's also fascinating to see that you can invest in players like Mikalenko, who are just regularly churning over the points, whether it be from attacking positions or defensive ones. And obviously they're significantly less. So I think we are starting to see a shift in the way that we would invest in the cheap defenders. So it's been 8 Nouri, and you know, we've had over the course of the season various different defenders that we've liked the look of. Now it feels like we're heading into the Mikalenko, Robinson from Fulham, who we'll talk about later because he was outstanding again in that Liverpool game. Maybe even Lewis Hull, who, as I've mentioned already, I enjoyed owning. Those cheaper options, it's changing up the way we look at it, but they're still there, aren't they? And Mikalenko, I think, is good.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think people are rushing to buy Everton defenders right away because the fixtures are so bad, but they do have that postponement against Liverpool to be rearranged. So I think there'll be a lot of conversation about Everton assets whenever that gets postponed to whichever game week that drops into. Yeah, I mean, I'll be tempted. You know, if it ends up game week 24, for example, they'll have Leicester home and obviously Liverpool, which isn't so great. But yeah, as you say, the Arsenal defence elite, they only conceded 2 shots against Everton, 0.09 expected goals conceded. That was the best of all teams in game week 16. It did take them 16 game weeks to get there, but Arsenal are now the best defence in the league for expected goals conceded over the season of 14.41. Yeah. Liverpool just behind in second on 14.9. So yeah, I'm on double Arsenal defence myself. I've got the Raya and Gabriel double up, and I don't think I'll change that for a very long time.
No, and I've also got Saka in there as well. I think having three Arsenal players makes a lot of sense. Obviously, I mean, for me, I went the cheaper option. I went for Timber and Raya, mostly because that's how I wanted to be able to afford Bruno Fernandes as part of my wildcard decisions. And I don't regret that because Timber's been really, really good over the last few weeks. And okay, maybe doesn't have, historically anyway, the same attacking threat as Gabriel, but we are seeing attacking threat from him and the underlying numbers look really good for Timber. So for me, however you choose to do it, the double up of the Arsenal defence still makes a lot of sense. And given that you've got either Raya or Timber that come in that 5 million bracket, so you haven't got to reach the 6 million that you do for a Saliba or a Gabriel, it makes sense. And for me, Saka, even with another blank this week, still remains a must-have right now because the fixtures are good. He had 10 crosses across the game week, which was more than any other player in the game. So doing the right things, obviously the set-piece threat is there from Arsenal and he takes a large chunk of those corners. So Saka remains a hold, even with the blank.
I'd agree with that. Yeah, 3 blanks in a row for Saka. But I think he's another example there where it could be the wrong time to sell him despite the blanks and it could just end up costing you more points. So I think he's an easy hold, Saki. He'll come good. There's one other player I actually want to give an honourable mention to, Ashley Young. Right, he's turning 40 next year and he's the joint fourth top scoring defender. He's got 10 returns in 16 games, obviously from goal contributions and clean sheets. He's on the same points as Saliba and Trent of the season. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I think that goes to show, doesn't it? All right, the next couple of fixtures for Everton aren't great. So in terms of investing in the defence now, maybe not. But post those next couple of fixtures, there's definitely an opportunity to invest in that Everton defence. And whether you want to go for a Young or a Mikalenko or a Branthwaite, if you're that way inclined, or a Pickford if you're looking for a new goalkeeper, I think there's options. And when you're looking at teams at the bottom of the table, it doesn't necessarily feel sensible to go for a defender. However, with Everton, it does feel a little bit different because they are defensively solid. They just can't score goals, which has been their problem this season. So yeah, I quite like the Ashley Young pick, weirdly. Like if you're looking to play your second wild card, relatively soon after it comes into play, you know, when you get into January and you think, oh, I need a new cheap defender, then you could do definitely worse than looking at the likes of Young and Mikulenko at Everton.
I mean, one defender I am looking at, but obviously they didn't do very well last game, is Trent. Should we talk about that Liverpool game too?
Yeah, I wasn't expecting this, actually. I thought that Fulham might struggle defensively against Liverpool without Bassi and without Anderson, because the two of them are so important in the way that Fulham play. But I love the fact that Fulham went there and said, no, we won't compromise on how we're going to play. We're just going to play against you. And the Liverpool defence, all right, they played for the majority of the game with 10 men after the Andy Robertson sending off. And that did fundamentally change the way that they play, because we had to see changes in the positioning. We saw Gomez going out there, and it was a bit of a mess defensively for them. Trent, I can't make up my mind, Oscar, what I feel about Trent this season. It's really hard, because in part I look at him, and then obviously comes on the other week, gets those two assists. The attacking threat looks like it's back. And I'm thinking, maybe I do want to spend 7 million on a Liverpool defender. And then we have matches like this one where the clean sheet just doesn't land. And I think if you're asking somebody to spend 7 million, you do want either regular clean sheets or regular attacking returns.
Yeah.
And for Trent, we're just not quite seeing that yet.
I'm on the fence about it, you know. For me, I am looking to add a Liverpool defender just because the fixtures are so great soon. Plus, there's that postponement.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, it's Trent or Van Dijk. I mean, Trent, he is a proven asset over the years. You know, he's had points totals of 185, 210, 160, 208. So we know what he can do. But of course, it's a slightly different system. On the eye test, he doesn't look as involved, but his underlying data is still great.
Yeah.
So, it's one of those two for me. I'm just wondering, could that 0.5 mil go towards something more important? Maybe like the assistant manager chip, you know, when we get that later in the season. I am still looking to add a Liverpool defender myself. You haven't got one at the moment, or you've got Trent?
No, at the moment, I've only got one Liverpool asset, and that's Mo Salah. And that feels ridiculous. Same. Like, you know, I look at my team and I'm looking at the way that they're playing and their position in the league. And I'm thinking, oh, this is a Liverpool team I should be trebling up on, not just doubling up. I should have three of them. Mm. And then I look at them and I think, but how? How do I double up on Liverpool? Where does that come from? Is it a Trent or a Van Dijk? And do I try and save the money? Do I go for the slightly cheaper goalkeeper option now in Alisson? Because obviously he's now cheaper than Raya, but I'm happy with Raya and the double up that I have at Arsenal. So I don't really want to change that position. Do I try and go all in on the Liverpool attack, which I think is how I'm likely to play this? But even then, it's been quite tough, because Diaz was the highest underachiever for game week 16 in terms of expected goals. So he could and should have got more than he did in that one. He has been good over the course of the season, but hasn't really set the world on fire. Pre-injury, I loved owning Jota. I really enjoyed having him in my team. Maybe I could go back to the double up with Salah and Jota. But then Cody Gakpo's played incredibly well in the absence of Jota, and I think would be unlucky to just automatically lose his spot because Jota's back. And I wonder how Slot's going to manage that rotation. Now, ahead of the game away at Spurs at the weekend, maybe I'm just going to give it the League Cup fixture in midweek and game week 17 to just watch how that Liverpool frontline plays out before I decide how to invest more heavily there. But I do feel like I feel like I'm underinvested in Liverpool, and I need to find a way to fix that.
You've got such a nice midfield as well, because you've got the three premiums, right? You've got Saka, Palmer, Salah.
Yeah.
And then you've got Bruno as well.
Yeah.
So it's like, where do you find the money? Because you're not going to sell the three premiums, but do you really want to sell Bruno?
No.
Just after he scored a penalty as well?
It's hard.
It's difficult to find the money. Yeah, it is difficult. And that's what I'm struggling with as well, how to free up that money. It's an interesting puzzle, but I think the Liverpool defence will be worth it. It's just how to get there. Mm. I mean, Alisson was back. That was his first start since game week 7. He's 5.4 mil. Maybe he's the one.
I mean, maybe Gomez is the option. A bit cheaper.
Yeah, but the problem is Konate, he might be back in like 2-3 weeks. So it's a short-term pick, isn't it? I want someone that's going to take me deep into the season. And, you know, whenever that double game week comes around against Everton, I'm looking for someone that takes me that far. And it's quite a big commitment, really. Because if I go Van Dijk, realistically, you're not going to use a transfer to go to Trent.
No.
So it's a long-term decision, and it's a big one I'm weighing up. I might just leave it a week because, as you say, they've got Spurs next. and then decide who to get for Leicester home. I mean, what a fixture that would be.
That's right. I think you have to be invested then. And I also think for me, the key one is what you said earlier about the assistant manager chip, because if you want to play that when the Liverpool double game, like I've already used my triple captain chip. So I'm kind of thinking, well, do I wait with that chip till the end of the season, or do I play it in the double game week when it comes around for Liverpool and Everton? And if I want to play it then, and I want to play it on slot, I need to find another way to be invested in Liverpool, because that's also going to take out one of my Liverpool slots. So then do I want to go for an attacker, or do I want to go for a defender? If I want to go for a defender, how much money do I want to invest? And I think you're right in what you say. Like my team, and we'll talk about Man United later, one of my options is to sell Bruno Fernandes and go to Ahmed. And if I do that, then that's going to free up a load of money that maybe allows Morgan Rodgers to become a Jota again. But it's difficult to make that call right now. So I think I'm just going to buy myself some time. But I haven't got that long, because as you say, that Leicester game is on the horizon. And I think I want to be doubled up at least on Liverpool by the time that one rolls in.
The last player that I wanted to highlight from that game was Robinson.
Incredible.
2 assists. He was sensational. Mm. And obviously people are looking for 8 Nori replacements. I mean, he's probably the number one choice right around that price range. The fixtures are Southampton home, Chelsea away. That's not great. You don't want to start him there. But then it's Bournemouth home, Ipswich home, West Ham away, Leicester away. So it's, I mean, what's that? Five games in the next six that you'd be more than happy to start him in.
Yeah.
Is he a number one 8 Nori replacement, or is there anyone else I'm forgetting?
I think there's a couple. I mean, for me, Robinson is my big regret on wildcard. I decided to sell him and he's punished me since that moment. I mean, it's not like the rest of the defenders that I bought in have been bad. But the decision not to have Robinson has haunted me. And so I do think I need to fix that. I, unlike a lot of the community, decided that I wasn't going to act rashly with the Ray and 8 Nori thing. I was just going to wait it out and watch how some other players play, because Robinson was definitely on the agenda. But I also wanted to watch Munoz in the Crystal Palace Brighton game and see how he got on. And I was also wanting to watch Bournemouth, because there's the Kerkez position as well that I wanted to kind of see how he got on. So there were three options for me to replace 8 Nori. They were the kind of standouts, unless I could find some budget to get to a Van Dijk. And then I think there's another conversation to be had there, but I didn't quite have enough money to go that lavish with my spending at the back. Robinson, I think for me, still remains a standout, mostly because Munoz is suspended now, having picked up his fifth yellow in the Brighton game, which we'll talk about later. So that ruled him out of this weekend. And I really like the Bournemouth defence. I really like Kerkez. I thought in the first half, Kerkez was fantastic. But I don't know. I just think the attacking threat that Robinson offers is so, so good that it's really hard to look anywhere else other than straight at him, particularly with the way that the Fulham fixtures are. And they continue to be great heading right the way through into the new year. So he's a really long-term pick, apart from that Chelsea game that you mentioned.
I think if I was ranking replacements, yeah, I'd agree with that. Robinson, and then maybe Cole will. And is it too late to buy Hull? I mean, should we talk about that Newcastle game? Because you've got Hull.
I have,
and that was kind of the standout fixture. They do have Ipswich next, but after that, it's Villa, Man United and Tottenham. But 4-0 to Newcastle. I've actually got a crazy stat here. In Van Nistelrooy's three games in charge of Leicester, they've conceded 74 shots, 74, 51 of those in the box.
Wow.
Which is by far more than any team. I did expect lots of goals in this one, because obviously they had Winks, Simari and Ndidi out. So they were up against it before the ball was even kicked. It was Chowdhury and Skip that played in midfield. So I did transfer in Isak. So I'm actually really glad that one came off. But lots of goals. Obviously Isak did come off early, which made sense. Wilson's out for a while. So why not manage his minutes when you're leading that comfortably? But well played with the Hull pick. I bet you were buzzing.
I was absolutely buzzing. It was one of those where I'd had him for a few weeks. He'd come in as part of my wild card a few weeks ago and he'd been okay, but now hadn't really set the world on fire. And I was watching him and I was like, every week I watch Newcastle and I'd be like, how has Lewis Hull not got me an attacking return yet? There's like all of these corners that he's taking. There was all of these assist potentials that he had. And I was like, the underlying numbers were massively there. And going into this one, I was like, right, if there's ever going to be an opportunity, particularly when I saw that Leicester team sheet, I was like, this is surely the moment where Lewis Hull goes off, and he does. So obviously he gets his 2 assists, he gets the clean sheet as well, the maximum bonus points. It's his first double-digit haul of the season, 15 points, only bettered in the game week by Ismaïla Sarr, who just had a worldie for Crystal Palace. yeah, I really, really enjoyed owning him. Created more chances than anyone else in game week 16. So when you're talking about a 4.5 million defender, there's not a lot not to like about that. And the fixtures continue to be nice for Newcastle. Do I wish I'd doubled up? Absolutely. Like, I have Lewis Hall, but I don't have any Newcastle attackers at the moment. And again, that in part is because of what you were saying about my midfield. But it was also in part because I wasn't willing to sell Dom Solanke ahead of the Southampton match. And on reflection, looking at the price, the score differences between the two of them, and I probably should have made that move and gone to Isak, because obviously he scores, gets the assist. And that's three goals and two assists in his last three starts now. So he's been really, really good. But a little shout out to Jacob Murphy as well, because four attacking returns in his last two starts, including the two goals that we saw at the weekend. So he looked good in this one. The trouble with him is it's consistency. Whereas with Isak, you have the consistency. It's just you've got to find 8.6 million to do it. And if you've got Watkins, I think it's the easiest transfer in the world to move him down to Isak.
Oh, I've just remembered. I felt so bad. My brother was asking me for advice on his FPL team, and he was looking at Murphy. You know what I'm going to say next?
You told him not to.
I was exactly that. His minutes are inconsistent. You know, Barnes is a threat. Mm. Like, he was predicted to start, but I was like, he comes off early. He's not nailed. Oh, just remembered that one. I felt so bad giving him that advice. He still had a good game week, but yeah, he didn't get Murphy in the end.
That's really annoying, particularly you know, when you get 13 points out of a player, because that's massive in terms of your rank gain, isn't it?
Mm. I mean, would you say Isak's the best forward in FPL right now to own?
I think it's close with him and Jackson. I think the Chelsea forward is also a really nice option given the Chelsea fixtures the way that they are right now. I think the thing with Newcastle is when Newcastle play well and when they score goals, Isak feels like he's definitely going to be part of it, particularly with Wilson injured. Whereas when you look at some of the others, the Jacksons, the Solankes in particular, when you look at those Chelsea and Spurs teams, the goals could come from anywhere. Like, you've got so many other assets in that team that could be part of it, whether it's, you know, Palmer or Enzo Fernandez, whether it's, you know, Brennan Johnson or Kulusevski or Son or Madison or whoever it is. Those other teams feel like there's multiple routes to goals. Whereas at Newcastle, Isak feels like he's always going to be in some way involved, which is why I like having players like Saka and Salah in my team, because it's the same thing in that Liverpool and Arsenal team, right? If there's goals, you bet on them being a part of them in some way or another. So Isak for me probably would be my first choice. If I was wildcarding right now, I think he'd be the first forward that I'd put into my team. Yeah, and I'd want to back him up with Jackson because I do really like the Chelsea fixtures and the way that they're playing. And then I think there's some kind of lower choices that you can make and save a little bit of budget on. I'm sure we'll talk about some more of them later. But yeah, I think Isak is the main man up top right now.
So your front three at the moment is Solanke, Evan Nilsson and João Pedro.
Yeah.
So have you got any plans to get Isak, or are you prioritising Liverpool defence, or where are you headed with your team at the moment?
Well, I've got two free transfers because I rolled going into last week and I've got a million in the bank. So I have got, there's opportunities there. So one of the things I'm thinking about is going from Solanke up. That is doable. I could go from Solanke to Isak, but I really do also have to fix the Ait Nouri issue at the back. Although I was planning to bench him this week anyway, so maybe I could just leave him on the bench, but he's going to just drop in team value. So at some point I've got to fix that, particularly as I want to go for Robinson, who I think is going to keep rising in price as well. But ideally, I don't know that I want to sell Solanke, because there's a bit of me that thinks that he's quite handy to have. Although I still don't necessarily think that he's the right Spurs asset either. Mm. So it is really difficult to know what to do with him. Evan Nilsson, I'm happy to hold. All right, he hasn't returned since I bought him in the last 2 weeks. But equally, I mean, I watched the game on Monday evening and I'm not quite sure. In fact, apart from a masterclass in Fabianski saves, Evan Nilsson scores in that one. João Pedro, it's just hard to get from João Pedro to Isak without sacrificing somebody else. And if I'm prepared to go from Diallo down, or Diallo from Bruno Fernandes, then I do have the budget in order to do that. But I just need to really carefully consider my team. But I think I do need to find a way to get Isak, because I think he's just going to punish me every week otherwise.
Yeah, he just looks too good. He's in the form of his life again. I think it's 9 returns in his last 8, you know, which is everything you need from a forward. So yeah, he's great value. I think he'd be my number one pick for the strikers. It just feels, I mean, if you've got Haaland at this point, would you get rid of him, Sam?
Yeah. Yeah, I would.
I think you have to, don't you? You go down to Isak, you know, move a midfielder up to a premium, because I don't think anyone's got Palmer, Salah, Saka and Haaland. I think that's very difficult to fit all of those in without lots of compromises.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
Should we talk about the Manchester derby?
Go on, let's, because what a fascinating game it was. I think you look at that game, I was really excited about this one, I'll be honest, Oscar. I was really looking forward to it. And we'd been out watching my son play grassroots football and it was freezing cold. The wind was blowing and I said to Lee, right, at least we can go home, sit with a cup of tea and we can watch what is bound to be a brilliant game. And then it really wasn't for most of it. Yeah. The first half, I was like, oh man,
they were in control. I think it was the 88th minute that City were leading 1-0. I just thought this is a formality now.
Yeah,
it's going to end 1-0. I did mention earlier that I bought Isak and that wasn't without compromise. So I sold Vardiol to fund Isak.
Oh, no.
So of course, Vardiol. And the thing is, Ake, Stones and Akanji are out. So I fully expected Vardiol to be playing centre-back. And he's only appealing to me as an FPL asset when he's actually in left-back.
And
he was in that left centre-back role. It was like Nunes in full-back. So when I saw the team sheet come out, I thought, that's good because he's not going to be nearly as likely to get something. Of course, he scores the header, so that was painful. But I mean, it did save me a bit, save me some from embarrassment, those two late goals. Yeah, Ahmad winning a penalty, 88th minute, Bruno scores it, which I guess you were buzzing about as a Bruno owner.
Yeah.
Then Ahmad gets the winner in about the 90th minute. Unbelievable. Another stat for you, actually. Since Ahmad's start in game week 11 against Leicester, he's been directly involved in 7 Premier League goals. Only Salah's been involved in more since then.
That is madness, isn't it? When you think about his price tag, like 5.1 million. When I invested in Bruno a few weeks ago, it was done on the basis that he was the most expensive Manchester United asset. And I wasn't really sure how to invest in Manchester United. I wasn't sure whether Rashford might be the answer or Garnacho might be the answer. I wasn't entirely sure where I was going. So in my head, I thought, well, go Bruno because he's on penalties. He's the most expensive. And then if somebody else is actually the one, it's very easy to move. Whereas it's much harder to be on a Garnacho, say, and then go, oh, it's Bruno that I needed and try and find a way up. So I did that and I don't regret it at all because Bruno's been fantastic. He's returned me a massive haul and then gets a nice haul in this one as well. 9-pointer, gets a couple of bonus points. Lovely days. Thank you very much. That's why we have you, right? Not really in the game too much. Not setting the world on fire, but scores a penalty. So, this is why you go penalty takers, right?
That's it.
And, you know, I think 9 returns in 9 games. Can't really ask for much more than that for Bruno Fernandes. So that's good. But I look at Diallo and I'm like, 5.1 million. I could save myself, 3.3 million over having Bruno Fernandes by going for you. 5 returns in the last 6 game weeks. It's just incredible. 44 points he's got in that time. That is a ridiculous return. And at the beginning of the season, we were all like, Morgan Rodgers is fabulous. And he is. And I still really like the Morgan Rodgers pick. But you get this guy a little bit cheaper still. So you can save a little bit of money here. If you've got Semenyo, you can save quite a significant amount of money by going there. He's almost feeling a bit like the Cole Palmer of last season, where he's just always going to be in the right place. The system is perfect for him with the way that Amorim has got that Manchester United team playing. I can't see anything not to like.
Me neither, to be honest with you. I mean, and Rashford and Garnacho are not even in the squad, so he's clearly favoured. He's playing 90 pretty much every game. I think there was just one game since that stat about Leicester, since game week 11, where he didn't start, but he came on at halftime then. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's gone up to 5.2 mil, but what great value he is. I've got a really difficult question for you, or maybe not. Enzo, I think he's 5.1 mil.
Yeah.
Or Ahmad, 5.2 mil. If you had to pick one, who would it be?
Do you know what, Oscar? I'm seriously thinking about both. Like, at this point, with the way that my team is structured, I'm kind of thinking, well, if I had both of them instead of Morgan Rodgers and Bruno Fernandes, the front line then suddenly has the ability to keep Solanke and have Isak. And it allows me to get a Liverpool defender at the back. And I'm looking at that thinking, all season, I've been banging on about how important the midfield is. Like, you've got to have these midfielders. They're so important. And they are. But last season, I went too late on Cole Palmer. It took me too long to jump on him. And so he'd gone up and up and up and up and up in price. This season, I feel like I'm at risk of doing the same thing again here. With Enzo Fernandez, and maybe this is a nice route into Chelsea, I was looking at him quite seriously for this game because Brentford just travelled so badly that I was thinking, oh, surely Chelsea are going to score a hatful. And I love the way that Lavia and Caicedo's position on the pitch has improved Enzo Fernandez's position on the pitch. And suddenly we're seeing much more attacking threat from him. Now, all right, it was a little bit different in this one in terms of the setup that Chelsea had, but yet another assist from Enzo. Attacking return in each of his last six matches now. He's made 14 key passes in that period, which is the fourth most amongst the midfielders. Couple that with all those amazing stats that we've just said about Diallo, and I think the pair of them together, what that can do for the rest of your fantasy team is just phenomenal in terms of the budget.
And I don't mind the double up. I mean, some people I've seen even tripled up Palmer, Enzo and Jackson. But yeah, just looking at his last six games, he's returned in all six. And what more can you ask for 5.1 million? Three goals, three assists in his last six. And yeah, I think that's a trap you can fall into in FPL. You kind of write a player off in your head, get a bit blindsided by perhaps if something's changed. And Maresca's come in and given him a new role where he's getting way forward. He's almost playing the Palmer role, but obviously clearly not as good as Palmer or quite as dangerous or lethal on the ball. But I think he's just unbelievable value for 5.1 mil. And he might be the way that I end up affording Trent in my team. The fixtures are still great as well. Just looking at the next, six? He's got Everton, Fulham, Ipswich, Palace, Bournemouth and Wolves. Like, you can buy him this week and you just start him for the next six and you're happy.
Well, that's it, I think, with both of these is that sometimes when you buy your cheaper option as your kind of cheap attacking position, you buy them and go, well, they're going to sit on my bench most weeks. So it doesn't so much matter if they don't get the start, or it doesn't so much matter if the form disappears. But with both of these, I genuinely think that they are both going to be good options because of the way that the Maresca and Amorin systems work. It's perfect for both of them. So yeah, I'm kind of, again, a bit like I was saying about Liverpool, I feel hugely underinvested in Chelsea right now. So obviously I've got Cole Palmer along with everyone else in the game, but I don't feel that that's enough. Like, I've got him, but I'm watching Chelsea. And to be honest, so on just to give you an insight into how my brain works, on Sunday evening, I was obviously watching the Spurs game and I had my phone on the arm of the chair next to me and it kept like, and Lee was like, what's going on your phone? I was like, oh, I've just got the Chelsea game, like the text scrolling through. And he was like, why? It's going to tell you on the TV. And I was like, I'm so stressed about only having Cole Palmer in this one. Like, I feel like not having a Jackson or an Enzo, or even both of them, to be honest, alongside Palmer is going to punish me at some point. And Jackson continues to look good, right? He's top for attempts on goal across the game week with seven, this one level with Madueke. So Chelsea very attacking, as we would expect against this Brentford side who don't like to defend at all when they go away from home. That's the most he's had in a match since joining Chelsea. So again, proving and highlighting the change in him under Maresca as well this season. And when you look at the upcoming fixtures that you talked about, none of them are rated more than a two on the FDR. So plenty of opportunity to score goals in those games. I feel like going into the weekend, I have to buy somebody from Chelsea. So the question is, do I buy Jackson? He's relatively easy for me to get from a Solanke. Or do I really want to put Isak in that position? And so if I do, then the obvious option is to go for Enzo instead in the midfield. But however I look at this, investing in Chelsea feels like the way to go for the next, well, for the foreseeable, to be honest.
The only real case you can make against Jackson, but this is a dangerous case to make, is he's on four yellows.
Yeah, but he has been for so long now, Oscar.
I know, well, this is it. Do you remember Diego Costa?
Yeah,
also Chelsea years ago, and he was a bit of a card magnet, and he got to four, and a lot of people thought, let's not go there, because he's going to get that fifth soon, and he didn't get it.
No.
It just didn't happen, and he kept scoring.
Yeah, I remember saying to Kelly a few weeks ago on the pod, on the main pod about this, like, we warn people about the suspension tightrope, and we go, right, they've got four yellows, but there's a real risk factor both ways in this, because you could bring them in, they could pick up the yellow card, and then they could be out. Or you could avoid them because you're worried about the yellow card and then miss out on hauls of points. And I sort of feel that's what I've been doing with Jackson over the last few weeks because I haven't really wanted to go for another risk player because I've had Ait Nouri, who was already a risk anyway. But I look at my squad now and I think there's definitely cover available in that. If somebody was to pick up a yellow and miss a game, I could cover it with the bench. So Yeah, Jackson, Enzo, Palmer. I actually feel like that treble up is on, but it's really hard, isn't it? Because you treble up on them. If you then want to treble up on Arsenal, I mean, thankfully, the treble up on Arsenal feels like it's two defenders and an attacker. So it's helping in terms of the positions on the pitch. Liverpool, you want to treble up there, but I feel like that would be one defender and two attackers. So again, that's another two into the squad. When you buy then add, you know, somebody from Manchester United because the fixtures are there, whether it's a Bruno or a Diallo or whoever it is, maybe you want to keep... I don't know. You're obviously going to want to keep other players in there too. It's difficult because you've only got eight spots. And if you take two of them up with Liverpool attackers and two of them up with Chelsea attackers, or three of them up probably in this case with Liverpool, with Chelsea attackers, it's hard to find the space. I think that's the issue. Yeah. So for me, I'm probably going to double up. I find it hard to make a case for a Chelsea defender, though, because they just don't keep clean sheets.
I was hoping you wouldn't say that. I've got Colwill, and that was so annoying, that Mbeumo goal, because I'd sold him for Bowen as well a couple of weeks ago. He's not done too badly, Bowen, but it had to be Mbeumo that scored to wipe the clean sheet as well in the 90th minute.
Yeah, well, I sold him for Bruno Fernandes as part of my wildcard, so actually I'm sort of all right with that happening, because it's okay. But I do... Every time I watch Chelsea, I love the attack. I love how attacking they are. But the defence always feels like it's got a little mistake in them here or there. And I find it difficult because... So Colwill's cheap. I think as a cheap option, he's great. The fixtures are there. Over the next few weeks, there should be at least a couple of clean sheets in there. But then it's difficult because like Gusto gets the start in this one, but he hasn't been consistently starting. And he's the one with the most attacking threat. So probably the one I'd want to go for if I was going to invest there. I don't think I'd go for the Chelsea goalkeeper simply because I think you got better options in other teams than you have with Sanchez. So it's hard. Like if you've got a Chelsea defender, then I absolutely think you hold because you're going to be rewarded with a few clean sheets over the next few weeks, surely. But I don't know. I just feel like if you're going to go and maximise Chelsea, then it's the three attackers.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I'm not sure if I'd go Gusto as well, just because he's used Caicedo and right back before, and then he inverts into midfield of Lavia, which is... why Enzo's been so great, because that gives him the license to get forward.
Yeah,
so absolutely. Yeah, I'll keep Colwill for the next six, obviously, but I'm not sure. Maybe two clean sheets in there.
Yeah.
I'll be happy enough with that. So yeah, Jackson's on four yellows. I'll just mention some other notable names, because I think you've got one of these as well. So Dunks on four yellows, Van Heck, Sanchez, Young, Cliver, Aitnori, Vardy and Rogers. So you've actually got three, haven't you? Aitnori, Rogers... and you're thinking of bringing in Jackson.
Yeah, so I think that's why I'm more likely to do their Enzo in for Rogers move, because it saves me a little yellow card headache over the festive period as well, and allows me to invest in Chelsea, and means I'm not having to sell my only Spurs asset. And maybe this is a nice segue into the Spurs game, because I know that you shouldn't play the game like this, but I really don't like looking at my team as a Spurs fan without a Spurs asset in there. And in the past, when Spurs haven't been so good, I've always had one of the cheapest routes into Spurs just sitting on my bench. Like in the past, it's been Harry Winks or the like, just sat there in the third bench position to make me feel better about life. And obviously for a lot of the time that I've been an FPL manager, Harry Kane has taken pride of place up top. So going into this season, I was really excited to own Dom Solanke because I have loved owning him at Bournemouth. Like, so good. But I think
he's been okay, hasn't he?
Yeah, and
like
that's how I feel.
Five goals, four assists, I think, something like that.
Yeah, I feel the same. Like, the thing is, as a Spurs fan, he's been phenomenal. Like, the way that he plays, the way that he moves the ball around, the way that he brings other people into play, the press, all of that.
The press, yeah, that's
so good.
He works hard. He's a good hold-up forward, but... yeah, he's different in terms of what he brings to the team to Kane.
Totally.
We were never expecting him to be as good as Kane, but I just thought, you know, Kane used to be like 12 million, didn't he? So Solanke for 7.5, you thought, oh, he could be a bit of a game breaker here.
Yeah.
Especially after last season. I think he got 18 goals for Bournemouth, but it's not quite happened. Yeah. And obviously 5-0 though, right? Yeah. It was 5-0 before half time, even actually. And I think Russell Martin sacked on the stroke of the full time whistle after that one.
Yeah, it was a really fascinating game because we started really well. High press worked incredibly well. 36 seconds in, Maddison scores. Maddison was phenomenal, by the way, in this one. I thought he played brilliantly, and he hasn't been consistently starting, but this was a real, like, this was really a really good Maddison performance. He's produced double digit figures in three of his last five away matches now. So particularly good on the road, Maddison. And when you think about the road tally for this season, he's got 54 points, which is only bettered by Salah and Palmer. So that's just madness when you think he hasn't really been playing too much either for Spurs lately. If you'd have said to me, Sam, Spurs have won 5-0 and scored those five goals in 45 minutes, I'd have been like, brilliant. Where's my double digit Solanke haul? So when he only got five, I was like, oh. And there were a couple of other moments where he could have and maybe should have got goals. However, I think investment in Spurs is difficult because I've just been saying Madison's not regularly starting, so I don't think you're going there. Son is so expensive at 9.8. I think he's really hard to have in your team, and he hasn't been playing the way that you'd want a player to play for 9.8 million. Like, you'd want them to be a lot better. I mean, he is particularly good against Southampton. His record against the Saints is madness. And he did play really well in this one, but he was being allowed to by the way that Southampton were defending. Like, we've not really seen Sonny running past players this season, but he did in this one. But he was being allowed to by the likes of Kyle Walker down that side. Kyle Walker Peters, that is, of course, not the actual Kyle Walker. So yeah, I think it's difficult with Spurs. Brennan Johnson for me still feels like the best attacking option. I know he gets nothing in this one apart from a yellow card. He doesn't start the game. And if you're a Brennan owner, you're really, really frustrated by that because you absolutely want him to play against Southampton in a 5-0 win. But I still think over the course of the next few weeks with the Spurs fixtures that we have coming up, and they're mixed, to say the least, obviously with Liverpool at the weekend. But I do think there's an opportunity there for Brennan owners to pick up a few more points. And I suspect, and I was a little bit frustrated because Spurs definitely reined it in the second half. They were 5-0 up. They were comfortable, took off Son, give him a rest. We've got a massive week ahead of us with the League Cup.
Exactly.
With Manchester United, followed by the Liverpool game at the weekend, and then obviously going into the Boxing Day fixture. These are huge. It's a huge week for Spurs in terms of making sure that we progress in the Cup in particular, and then going into that game at the weekend. We cannot afford to lose any more Premier League matches. So I think Postecoglou and that Spurs team looked at it and went, right, this is our opportunity to just see out a game. Let's just prove to everyone we can see it out.
Remember when Chelsea played Southampton and it was a huge amount of rotation.
Yep.
Jackson didn't start, Cole didn't start. I mean, there was some serious rotation. Not many players that normally do start did start that one.
Yeah.
And I think Postecoglou looked at it and thought the same thing. I have to confess, I got incredibly lucky because I had Pedro Porro.
Oh,
he was benched.
You did get lucky.
Yeah, and he came on about 28 minutes because Udogie went off injured. So he ended up getting me clean sheet points despite being benched. I think that might be the first time in about 12 years playing FPL that's actually happened, where my defender gets benched, comes on, and still gets me clean sheet points.
Yeah, it was and good, right? Porro came on, did a good job. The Spurs defence staying tight. I mean, they actually played the offside line incredibly well in this one. I was like, oh, blimey, we had to play an offside trap quite well today. So that was, it was good. And, you know, when you're talking about a Spurs defence, not with Mickey van der Ven, not with Christian Romero, not with Vicario, then not with Udogie either. So it was a back line that consisted of Jurgensen, who I thought was excellent in this one and actually was unlucky not to get an attacking return of his own. Archie Gray, the midfielder who seems to get deployed anywhere else but in midfield and is just incredible, doing so well. And then Jed Spence, who I was so impressed with, started off in Pedro Porro's position, which is his favoured position, was so great, and then had to move over with the Udogie substitution and was fantastic. Now, I realistically don't think that investing in the Spurs defence other than Pedro Porro is worth doing. And to be honest, Oscar, if you said to me, Sam, I'm going to sell Pedro Porro because I want to get a Liverpool defender in, I'd be like, yeah, absolutely. Because
Sam,
the clean sheets are...
I'm going to sell Pedro Porro to buy Trent. Yeah, that's the plan. Exactly that.
But it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Because Pedro Porro's underlying stats are there, right? He's got the attacking threat, but hasn't really returned on that attacking threat. Not in the way that I think we would have all wanted.
Yeah. The one time, you're so unpredictable, Spurs. The one time he did deliver was against City, and I benched him that week when he scored. They kept the clean sheet despite missing Van der Ven and Romero. So he got 14 points that week. I think I'm just done with Porro.
I don't blame you.
I hate to say it as well, as I know you're a Spurs fan, but I think you're going to need a miracle against Liverpool. you've got both centre backs out. You've got Vicario out, and maybe Udogie as well. All of those in combination. So what would the back line even be if Udogie's out? Like Spence, Gray, Dragozin, Porro.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm captaining Salah. I'm telling you now.
It's so hard though, isn't it? Because I look at it and I'm like, we're so unpredictable. Like we're top for attacking returns and third best across the league for defence this season. Yet we're 10th and we're like, and everyone laughs at us because of our defensive fragility. And I get it because I watch us, like, and obviously I watch Spurs a lot. And I watch and I think, how are we third best for defences? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. But then we keep clean sheets against teams like Manchester City and it's just baffling. But yeah, I think we might also struggle this weekend against that Liverpool attack. But we are, well, we'll just have to see what happens, won't we? We do score a lot of goals. So I guess it might just be a case of who can score more, because I don't think we'll be keeping a clean sheet. So yeah, I don't blame you for selling Pedro Porro, that's for sure.
Someone who is a bit predictable, I'll just say, for all the wrong reasons, is Southampton. There's been 16 double-digit returns against them this season in 16 games. So I'm looking at the next fixture, Fulham. Like, who are the opportunities there? Maybe Iwobi? Raul Jimenez could be a good option, but does he start 100%? Because obviously it was Muniz that came off the bench and scored against Liverpool.
Yeah.
Jimenez blanked. He does come off early. So I'm on the fence about Jimenez. He could be great value for 5.5 mil. Maybe even with limited minutes, he'd still be enough. But I think Iwobi's going under the radar as an option. Of course, Robinson as well for that fixture next game week.
I just wonder though, Oscar, we often see a new manager bounce when teams sack their manager. And for both Southampton and Wolves, I just wonder whether we might just see a completely different system. I don't think we'll be seeing the same playing out from the back from Southampton against Fulham. It'll be interesting to watch them actually in the League Cup in midweek to see whether they, you know, kick into gear in a different way and whether they set up differently against that Liverpool team. It's so hard to know when a team gets a new manager quite. And of course, we haven't got confirmation of who that new manager is yet, so it'll be an interim for now. But you know that the job of an interim manager is just to level the playing field, start again. Let's try and get some momentum. Let's try and build positivity. And I think we might. Southampton have not got bad players, nor have Wolves. Both of these teams have got decent players and have the ability to turn it around. It's just how are they going to set up, and will that happen in game week 17? So I'm going to go for Robinson, but I'm not going to go too heavy on Fulham just yet, I don't think, just in case we see a bit of a bounce from Southampton.
You're more positive than me. I mean, that's an unenviable position. Whoever takes over Southampton or Wolves, they've got a serious task ahead of them. You know, not just the fixtures, but the squad. I mean, Wolves are more than good enough to be, you know, well outside the relegation zone by game week 38. But it's a difficult job, that Southampton one, whoever does come in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, speaking of Southampton, they do play in the League Cup before the game week 17, along with a few other teams. Arsenal, Crystal Palace, Newcastle, Brentford, Liverpool, Tottenham, Man United all play in the League Cup. And Chelsea in the Europa Conference League. So be careful with those transfers.
Yeah, and while you're waiting and being patient, don't forget you can join Jules, Kelly and I on this week's official podcast.
If you haven't already, join the FPL Pod Mini League. The code is Q7YCO0. Good to see you, Sam. Nice chatting.
Yeah, you too, Oscar. Hopefully see you again soon.